This is Carol Foster of 2 Timothy 2:15 Resources, and I am so excited that you're going to join me today as we study God's Word. The response new Messianic believers give when asked why they initially visited a Messianic congregation is, "We knew there had to be more." As we study together, we will begin to see that yes, indeed, there has to be more. For additional study aids to assist you in studying along with us, go to our website, sectim.org. When we last met, we had just begun our study of Bereshit, chapter 50. We had read previously that Yaakov has charged Yosef to bury him in the Promised Land. We discovered that this was an act of faith, that one day Jehovah would allow his descendants to return and settle there. In the last chapter of the Book of Beginnings, Bereshit, we see the final acts of Yosef recorded. Let's read the first three verses of chapter 50 so that we can see this event unfold. Then Joseph fell on his father's face and wept over him and kissed him. Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father. So the physicians embalmed Israel. Now 40 days were required for it, for such is the period required for embalming. And the Egyptians wept for him 70 days. Yosef's deep-seated affection for his father is captured in three concrete actions toward Yaakov's lifeless body. First, he threw himself upon it. Second, he wept over it. And third, he kissed him, as we read in verse 1. The depth of his grief exceeded his passionate reunion with his father at Yaakov's coming to Egypt, as we read in chapters 45 and 46. That he fell upon his father's face and kissed the dead are actions occurring only here in the Tanakh. The mention of the patriarch's face recalls the promise in chapter 46, verse 4, that Joseph's own hand would close your eyes. We next discover that Yosef ordered his physicians. Now, the word used is translated literally as healers to mummify the body. The bombing of both Yaakov and Yosef are the only two references to a bombing found in the entire Bible. We find that verse 3 provides us with the detail that the embalming procedure required 40 days. The customary Egyptian mourning rites involved 70 days, and this included that 40-day period. Since embalming does not require 70 days, therefore the period probably included public ceremonial rites and honors. I think it's very interesting that the days of mourning stated in these verses also corresponded to the number in Yaakov's family who descended into Egypt, as we discovered in chapters 46, verse 27. We can also find this fact in Shemot, or Exodus chapter 1, verse 5. The fact that the patriarchs underwent embalming and the Egyptians declared a formal period of mourning speak to the prestige that Yaakov and Yosef held among the Egyptians. Hebrew practice was the burial of the dead, not embalming, and the period of mourning varied from 7 days to 30 days, as we find in other passages of the Tanakh. Embalming was practiced throughout Egypt's history and was a religious rite probably related to Egyptian beliefs about the afterlife. Essentially, embalming was designed to retard the normal processes of decomposition of the corpse. Methods varied from simple wrapping the body in resin-soaked linen to the elaborate procedures of disemboweling the corpse, collecting the organs in containers, and filling the voids with linen. Verses 4 and 6 read, "When the days of mourning for him were past, Joseph spoke to the household of Pharaoh, saying, 'If now I have found favor in your sight, please speak to Pharaoh, saying, My father made me swear, saying, Behold, I am about to die. In my grave which I dug for myself in the land of Canaan, there you shall bury me. Now, therefore, please let me go up and bury my father, then I will return.' Pharaoh said, 'Go up and bury your father, as he made you swear.'" In verses 4 through 6, we discover that when the days of mourning were past, Yosef spoke to the household of Pharaoh. The word household would be better translated as court. He petitioned the court to obtain the king's permission to bury his father in Canaan. We see that by Yosef addressing the court of Pharaoh and by the expression, "If I have found favor," it appears that at this time Yosef himself was not able to have a direct audience with Pharaoh. This may be related to the cultic impurity or mourning taboos since he had handled his father's remains. Yosef wisely appeals to the sympathies of Pharaoh by recalling Yaakov's dying wish, to which Yosef had taken an oath to perform. The repetition of "my father" in these verses, "my father made me swear and bury my father," appear to frame Yosef's request. Yosef discreetly does not mention Yaakov's resistance to the notion of burial in Egypt. Did you notice that in the verses that we just read, that Yaakov himself had already prepared a place in which to be buried? Let me read this verse again. "My father made me swear, saying, 'Behold, I am about to die in my grave which I dug for myself in the land of Canaan. There you shall bury me.'" I was not able to find a record of Yaakov's hewing a burial chamber for himself, but can probably assume he, or those at his command, did so as they prepared the tomb for the burial of Leah. I don't think that a separate tomb is meant. Rather, he probably refers to a chamber in Leah's tomb's cave. The text emphasized Yaakov's pre-planning and involvement in preparing the burial receptacle. "In my grave, which I dug for myself, bury me." Perhaps Pharaoh appreciated the request of Yaakov, who had prepared a tomb, which was in line with the many Egyptian pharaohs who studiously engaged in the same project throughout their lives. The word "now" introduces the three requests of Yosef, based on the reason that he had stated that they should be honored. So, as to clinch the argument, Yosef assures Pharaoh that he will return once the task is accomplished. The fact that Pharaoh might not allow Yosef to go reflects the value the king placed on his second in command. Permission appears to hinge on the king's respect for the solemn oath that Yosef swore to his father. After Yosef buried Yaakov in the Promised Land, as we read in verses 7 through 14, he dealt with another issue regarding his brothers. Let's read verses 15 through 21 to discover what this issue was. "When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, 'What if Joseph bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong which we did to him?' So they sent a message to Joseph, saying, 'Your father charged before he died, saying, "Thus you shall say to Joseph, "Please forgive, I beg you, the transgressions of your brothers and their sin, for they did wrong. And now please forgive the transgressions of the servants of the God of your father."' And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also came and fell down before him and said, 'Behold, we are your servants.' But Joseph said to them, 'Do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. So, therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones.' So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them." His brothers were afraid that he might take revenge on them now that their father was dead. But we read that he calmed his brothers' fears and encouraged them regarding Jehovah's faithfulness to Abraham and his descendants. In the next two verses, 22 through 24, we find that Yosef and his family did indeed return to Egypt, for they were to remain until Jehovah would send them a redeemer in the form of Moshe. The word tells us, "Now Joseph stayed in Egypt, he and his father's household, and Joseph lived 110 years. Joseph saw the third generation of Ephraim's sons. Also the sons of Machir, the sons of Manasseh, were born on Joseph's knees. Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am about to die, but God will surely take care of you and bring you up from this land to the land which he promised an oath to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob.' Then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, 'God will surely take care of you, and you shall carry my bones up from here.' So Joseph died at the age of 110 years, and he was embalmed and placed in a coffin in Egypt. This is where they would remain until Jehovah would send Moshe to bring them out of Egypt and return them to the Promised Land. We also see that Joseph reassured them that Jehovah would come to their aid and return them to the land that he had promised to their fathers. When that happened, they were to take Joseph's bones with them. No doubt, Joseph had heard about and remembered what Jehovah had told Abraham regarding his descendants spending 400 years in a foreign country. We covered this in one of our previous sessions. However, let me read these verses, as they're found in chapter 5 and verses 13 and 14. God said to Abram, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. But I will also judge the nation whom they will serve, and afterward they will come out with many possessions." Going back to our focal verses, we again see that there is the impression of blessings bestowed upon Joseph, as he lived to see his offspring down to the third generation by Ephraim's lineage. This referred to Joseph's great-grandchildren, or possibly great-great-grandchildren. Such long life was considered a special benevolence from Jehovah, as we read in Tehillim, or Psalms 128, verse 6. "Indeed, may you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel." This blessing can still be heard when children are born into families today. We find a twofold substantiation of Joseph's long life by the phrase, "Joseph saw the third generation," and then the mention of his great-grandchildren by Machir, son of Manasseh. The influential tribe of Machir produced the numerous and powerful Gileadites who occupied the land of Gilead. The significance of Joseph's knees indicates formal adoption, or at least informal guardianship of these children by Joseph. If we examine the text closely, we will see that Joseph's narrative intentionally parallels Yaakov and Joseph's in other matters, such as they were both embalmed, they both extracted oaths from the sons to return the remains to the Promised Land, and as we read, they were born on Joseph's knees and its implication. This is not unthinkable that Joseph would do as Yaakov did and adopt his descendants. I want to read verse 5 of chapter 48. This will give you the basis for my assumption. "Now your two sons were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt are mine. Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine as Reuben and Simeon are." Joseph's final recorded words were, "I am about to die." This sets the scene and the importance of Joseph's previous prophecies that the Israelites would return to the land. The implication is not that the brothers themselves would enter the Promised Land, but that their offspring or future generations would receive the promise. We find this frequently stated in the Word, that the children and or their offspring are viewed as one, and the same, as we see in the phrase, "sons of Israel," in verse 25. Joseph's brothers' presence at his last words gives the Joseph story a fitting balance, for it was they who heard his first predictions of the future, as we studied in chapter 37, verses 5 through 10. Moreover, the image of his brothers present at Joseph's death gives a sense of solemnness to his passing, like that of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, when each one's sons attended his death and burial. Although he will not live to participate in the return, Joseph confidently declares that Adonai will lead their descendants. Joseph could not appeal to the authority of a direct word from Jehovah. Unlike Yaakov, there was no divine revelation for Joseph. He relied on the witness of his father and trusted in the promised word. The promise that Adonai will surely come to your aid gives the affirmation that he will surely visit you. The word for "come" in this sentence is pequod, and often describes Adonai's intervention, bringing about harm or good. Similar wording can be found in Shemot or Exodus chapter 3, verse 16. "I have watched over you." This describes Jehovah's watch care over the suffering Israelites in Egypt, which would lead to their deliverance and return to the promised land. We will discover in our study of Shemot that the following phrase, "and he will bring you up," will become a repeated phrase, recalling the redemption of Jehovah's people out of Egypt, another oft-repeated phrase in Scripture. Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov and its variations occurs here for the first time in the Tanakh. When this occurs, it is important for us to remember that the rule of first usage applies. This rule states that how this word or phrase is used for the first time will set the precedence for future understanding of its use throughout the Tanakh. This renowned reference to the Israelites' forefathers is reflected in the common phrase found in Devarim, or Deuteronomy, which pertains to the gift of the land, which Jehovah swore to your fathers. The divine oath made by Jehovah himself to Abraham confirmed the promises to the faithful and loyal patriarch. The naming of the three patriarchs bridges Bereshit and the event when Adonai reveals himself to Moshe, commissioning him to bring to completion what Yosef has promised. We can find this in Shemot chapter 3, verses 6, 15, and 16, as well as chapter 33, verse 1. Out of Yosef's certainty in the promises made by Jehovah's sworn oath to his forefathers, he requires the Israelites to swear an oath to return his remains to Canaan, the promised land. Did you notice that Yaakov had put Yosef under the same obligation? But in this case, the return of Yosef's body would not be immediate. We also should note that there's no evidence of formal mourning, no pomp and circumstances mentioned regarding the death of Yosef. Yosef's faith enables him to wait, an exemplary act of faith that we see the writer of the letter to Hebrews celebrate in chapter 11, verse 22, as he wrote, "By faith Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the exodus of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bones." When Jehovah fulfills his promise, the Israelites must do the same in returning Yosef's body to the promised land. This was Yosef's statement of faith in Jehovah's word, when he insisted that he accompany the people returning to the land. Yosef's identity and that of his sons were bound up in the pledge made to their forefathers, not in his Egyptian past or present. The final words of Yosef look to the future, as every believer should. Intuitively, he refers to his brothers, in verses 18 and 24, as the sons of Israel, as he looks forward to the formation of the future nation. The narrator wants to keep before the reader that these figures, these patriarchs, were and are today their national ancestors. This narrative is not merely a family story, but part of an epic account of Israel's past. It will be the brothers' descendants who will carry out this charge. Yosef repeats the prophecy that Adonai will liberate them, and when that moment comes, they must transport his bones with them. This demonstration of Yosef's faith was not forgotten, for Moshe fulfilled the wish of Yosef, recalling the words of the patriarch, as we read in Shemot 13, verse 9. "And it shall serve as a sign to you on your hand, and as a reminder on your forehead, the law of the Lord may be in your mouth, for with a powerful hand the Lord brought you out of Egypt." In verse 26, which is the final verse of chapter 50, and the final verse of the book of Bereshit, we read, "So Joseph died at the age of 110 years, and he was embalmed and placed in a coffin in Egypt." This final verse summarizes what the passage has already informed the reader regarding Yosef's end, adding that his mummified body was deposited in a coffin in Egypt. Again, I want to mention that Yosef and Yaakov are the only two biblical persons who were embalmed. His age, at 110 years, matches the lifespan of Yehoshua, which makes for an interesting happenstance, since Yehoshua, the successor of Moshe, must have overseen the final journey of Yosef's sarcophagus, as we read in Shemot 13, verse 19. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he made the sons of Israel solemnly swear, saying, "God will surely take care of you, and you shall carry my bones from here with you." Their burials in Canaan are recorded in Yehoshua chapter 24, verse 32. Now they buried the bones of Joseph, which the sons of Israel brought up from Egypt at Shechem, in the piece of ground which Jacob had bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of money, and they became the inheritance of Joseph's sons. Joseph and Yehoshua are the bookends of Israel's sojourn in Egypt. The mention of Egypt as the final word of Bereshit prepares the way for the events that follow in the book of Shemot, or Exodus. The translation of the word Shemot is names, so this is really the book of names. Although the promise to the patriarchs was not yet fulfilled, and at that time appeared very far from ever being accomplished, the book of Bereshit is calling on the reader to take up the faith of Abraham, Isaac, and Yosef in the promises made to them by Jehovah. This faith that was stated so clearly in this book is the same faith that we have or should have today as believers in the same Jehovah, the same God that the patriarchs displayed. We so often hear people say, we are sons and daughters of Abraham. But just as Yaakov or James tells us in the Brit Hadashah, faith without works is dead. Jehovah's revealing of himself and his instructions for our lives today is progressive. In Bereshit, we see the beginnings of the relationship that Jehovah wants with each one of us. We saw that at creation, the relationship between the Creator and his creation, man and woman, was one of oneness, nothing between them. Then sin came in, and the relationship changed. We found that Jehovah did not abandon his creation, but began a process of redemption and restoration that included Noah, Abraham, Abraham's son Yitzhak, Abraham's grandson Yaakov, and Abraham's great-grandson Yosef. As we continue our overview of the Tanakh, we will see Jehovah's progressive revelation of redemption and restoration. We will also discover how he worked through individuals and nations to accomplish his will. But most importantly, we will discover his instructions to his people on how to live a godly, holy, set-apart life that is pleasing to him. Now, I want you to remember that Elohim, God the Creator, does not change. The instructions he will give to his people are just as applicable today in the believer's life. My final question to myself, as well as to you, those of you who are listening, is, does the faith of our fathers, the patriarchs of the faith, dwell within you? Is a promise that was given to them that they shall dwell in the promised land for us today? Now, the promise was for the land of Canaan. But where is our promised land? Is it our eternal dwelling place, where we will dwell in that city in which there is no need for sun nor moon, as the sun, Yeshua, will be our light? We have a promise from Yeshua, the Son of Jehovah, that he gives us in Yochanan, or John 14, verses 1 through 4. Do not let your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you. For I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Just as Abraham, Isaac, Yaakov, and Yosef had faith, which is defined by Webster as trust, confidence, reliance, conviction, and belief, we today should have that same faith, trust, and confidence in him, his word, and his promises. Join me next time as we begin our overview of the book of Shemot, or Exodus. Remember that there are worksheets and study aids for this series as free PDF downloads on my website, www.sectim.org. Please subscribe to the website so that you will automatically receive updates as I post them. Thank you for joining us today as we delve into the beautiful truths of God's Word to indeed discover that there has to be more. I pray that the Word applied to your daily life will bring a deeper understanding of His love letter written just to you. Let me remind you that we have additional study aids to assist you with our studies together on our website, sectim.org. May this day fill you with the love of God, joy, and shalom. Nothing missing, nothing broken in your life.